Okay, turn to 2 Kings 5. 2 Kings 5. Get a main verse. Andy reads 2 Kings 5, 20 through 26. Harvey get Mark 9:33, and I think that's all. I'll just be referring to the text. Andy, go ahead and read 2 Kings 5.
But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Look, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian, while not receiving from his hands what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him." So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, 'Indeed, just now two young men of the son of the prophets have come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments.' So Naaman said, 'Please take two talents.' And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of garments and handed them to of his servants. And they carried them out on ahead. Then he came to the Tadel. He took them from their hand and stored them away. Then he let them go, and they departed. Now he went in and stood before his master Elisha, said to him, 'Where did you go, Gehazi?' And he said, 'Your servant did not go anywhere.' Then he said to him, 'Did not my heart go with you when the man turned back from his chariot to meet you? Is it time to receive money and to receiving clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and oxen, male and female servants?'"
Okay, so this is in our series on leadership from Elisha, and so today's lesson is dealing with disciples. So one of the, in the story of Gehazi, shows us a part of leadership is you have to be able to deal with people. You have to be able to deal with disciples in negative issues. And so that's what we're going to look at, dealing with disciples. Let's look, first of all, at spiritual sensitivity. So you understand that most pastors in America, in the world, are developed by schooling. And that shows us a problem. This story actually shows us what would be the problem if you based being a man of God on schooling. And that is that schooling is, number one, divorce from character. It doesn't really matter what you are. As long as you can pass the test, then you're a man of God. This story shows us the power of discipleship. Elisha is not teaching him in a class credit how to be a man of God, but he has a personal connection. And this is actually what is a vital part of developing men of God, is having some level of a personal connection. You have to be able to observe men in real life situation, in their relationships, in their work, their marriage, ministry interactions. Those are the things that you have to have. So, in this story, we see something. When you have that connection, we see the need for spiritual sensitivity. The lesson out of this story is that there are things in a man's life that are unseen. So Elisha is not there when Gehazi, you know, that he lies. He goes because of this, lying and stealing. So the simple fact is you can't keep track of everyone. I don't have enough hours in a day. I don't have enough interest in keeping track of what people are doing. But this story shows us something. Elisha felt something in his spirit. Verse 26, he says, "Didn't my heart go with you?" That is such an interesting statement. He is not there. Right? He didn't have a secret microphone on Gehazi's iPhone. He wasn't bugging him and have recordings of what he's doing. He says, my heart went with you. And so I think what he's saying here is, I sensed that something was wrong. That's a very important part of ministry, because there are things that, you know, obviously if somebody punches somebody in church, you think, there's a problem there. You know, that's a no-brainer. And I've had that happen in church, by the way, on occasion. But this is not talking about, he's not even there. And yet he says, I sensed something was wrong. Or, you know, perhaps because he was a prophet, that maybe it was that this is Elisha's way of saying, God spoke to me. And I've had that happen, that God has just laid on my heart either a feeling that something's wrong in a man, or I've had God speak to me about problems. So, but what's interesting here is that he puts it in terms of my heart. So, we're looking at this not from the standpoint of Gehazi. We're talking about Gehazi, we talk about hypocrisy, greed, all kinds of other issues. But we're looking at Elisha. So, if you want to be an effective leader, we see some things here. Number one is genuine concern. My heart went with you. So, no doubt, Gehazi had been praying, or Elisha rather, had been praying for Gehazi. No doubt he thought about him. And this is a part because he had a genuine concern. So he's talking about this is I care for you. My heart went with you. Number two, there's a connection with God. This is something that God reveals. This is not like being a poker player reading tells in a man's face because he's got a tick next to his eye as he tells you a lie. Is God reveals this. You have to have, as a man of God, one of the most basic elements of being a man of God on any level is simply having a relationship with God. Jesus said to Peter, I've prayed for you. John 17 is an entire chapter devoted to Jesus' prayer for his disciples. And so if you have a connection with God, you've heard me say many times, there is nothing wrong with God's voice. We're looking at that in the Bible study series, is God can speak. God can speak negative things. He can guide you in positive ways and lead you to success. But this scripture, did my heart go with you? If I'm connected to God, God can also give me warnings, promptings, whatever you want to call it, in the Spirit. Third thing that this shows us here is that Elisha had a realistic view of his own men. One of the things I deal with over the years is that there are guys, they have a blindness for for their own men. These are probably the same people that would have a blindness for their own children. I have never understood parents who instantly defend and instantly think that everyone's lying if their child. My parents were just not like that. My parents were well aware of the evil inside of the Mitchell kids, and so they had no problem. They had a realistic. It's well possible that they could do wrong. So there are men that they don't want to know anything negative about their men. They don't want the trouble. That's the real issue, or they simply don't believe that their men could do anything wrong. So. You have men who, if you have a blindness, if you assume that anybody connected with me could never do anything wrong, that's very foolish, because then God is unable to warn you. So, did my heart go with you? There's something wrong here. And apparently, Elisha said, and that is possible that something could be wrong. If you have a blindness, God can't speak to you. And then you have... the other thing that happens is if you have a blindness, you will actually reject the word of others. I've had a few sad instances in my life where people that I love, I have warned their pastor of things. I warned a pastor one time somebody I love, I say, you better do something about this guy, or I think he's about to commit adultery. You better step in and do something. But this guy was one, he didn't want the trouble. He didn't believe it. He rejected that. There's no way that could... And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. This man brought destruction in his life. So, spiritual sensitivity is something that you have to have if you're going to work with men effectively. Second thing in this story has to do with challenging disciples. It's not enough to sense things. I feel something's wrong. There is a time, and this doesn't mean that, you know, there's a timing issue, and I'm sure this question will come up. There is a time when disciples must be challenged. Okay, I feel something's wrong, or God warns me, or there's a check in my spirit. But there has to be a willingness to personally speak to or confront men about what they're doing wrong. We see two things in this scripture that Elisha does. The first is inquiry. Verse 25, where did you go? So he's trying to find out the facts. I can feel that something is wrong, but this is important. He doesn't just immediately say, you lying, greedy devil, get the facts, because it is possible that you could be wrong. There are times when I have assumed or felt things, and I had the facts wrong. And when it was explained to me, it's like, oh, okay, no problem. So, getting the facts. But the other thing that he's doing here is there are times in which you sense, or you may even know something. What Elisha's doing is he's giving Gehazi a chance to be honest. And that's an important. A man who will own up to wrongdoing quickly, there's a much better chance that he can be healed. Even if he's done something wrong, there's more hope. So the first thing he does is, where did you go? That's inquiry. The second thing is rebuke. Is that now he moves on. He won't be honest. Elisha, apparently God has told him what is going on. Verse 26, Is it time to receive? So now he's bringing correction. He's up front. What you have done is wrong. This is totally unacceptable as a man of God. And that's a part of this. On every level, this starts with your children. Children must be confronted. Your job as a father, if you have children now, if you're going to have children in the future, is you have to be willing to confront. That's all there is to it. You have to, as cute as they are, as much as you love them, you have to say no, even if they pout, even if they throw a fit, even if they have mood, you are going, that's where it starts. And if you can't correct your own children, you have no hope of correcting disciples. It moves right on the line, and the reason why men won't confront their own children is selfishness. I can't be bothered. I'm going to hope it goes away, or I'm going to leave my wife to do it. No, a man confronts. That's all there is to it. And so he has to do that. That's true in disciples. You want to raise up men. You want a church to run effectively. Is there has to be confrontation. There has to be rebuke. Isn't this the method that Jesus used? We see that he inquired. Mark 9:33.
And he came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, what was it you disputed amongst yourselves on the road?
So here, here's what Jesus is doing, is this is the inquiry method. What were you talking about? Don't you think the God of the universe in human form, don't you think that he knew what they were talking about? What were you talking about? He's wanting them to... own up to this. He rebuked. He said to James and John, you know not what spirit you're of. He said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. So there's a confrontation when he sees that things that are wrong. This is the method that Paul used or recommended for effective leadership. He told Timothy and Titus, rebuke them sharply. This is the the Cretans, Timothy, he said, rebuke with all authority. In another place, he said, reprove, rebuke, and exhort. And so he said, that's a part of leadership. An ineffective leader is unwilling to do those two things. They're unwilling to go through the unpleasantness of confrontation. Because confrontation is no fun. When you confront, I'll be up front with you, whether that is kids, whether that is people in ministry, whether that is disciples, or whether that is pastors, is unfortunately a good percentage of people, they don't react well and say, why, thank you for pointing out that I'm off track. They don't thank you. You get emotion. You get stress. You get anger. You get problems. I quit. You get it's no fun confronting. So there are men that they're unwilling. I'm not going to mess with that. Or they're unwilling to go through the hassle of consequences. In this case, if he judges Gehazi, very simple things, he needs a new disciple. And so this is part of the problem, is that you have men that they hold ministries that are important, and if you take them out, it's going to disrupt. You have to rearrange bands and drama teams and song service and choirs and every other ministry because people do wrong. That's just the way it is. It must be done. And you can't let consequences keep you from that. So, failing to deal with issues is not a good leadership strategy. If you are unwilling to deal with them, number one, you fail to help a man see himself. This is what Gehazi got from Elisha, is you need to see yourself. Filled with greed, the leprosy outside is actually simply a visible picture of what he had inside for a long time. If you don't confront man, you create monsters. If you don't confront children, you create monsters who will never understand what's inside of them. Number two, you let people get to the point of destruction. If you don't confront them, then they'll destroy themselves simply because you were unwilling to go through unpleasantness. You cause disruption for other people. This is what happens. You discover in life, in leadership, on jobs, in families, in churches, people who are not confronted, you let them ruin things for other people. Is you get I get to people who they tell me, you know, people are saying if something isn't done about this guy, they're going to leave the church. And so why don't you do something? Very early on, I learned a very simple ministry lesson. I had a guy that he was a psycho, but he was an unclean sucker. This guy was he would go in the bathroom for long periods of time, and I don't even want to know what he was doing in there, but it wasn't good, I could tell you. And so I had converts. I had powerful converts. I had a bunch of girls saved from a biker gang, Satan's Riders, and these girls, their ladies getting saved, they're bringing their husbands. I got converts. And so my good convert ladies came to me one time and they said, Pastor, this guy gives us the creeps. I don't even like coming to church. This guy comes and sits near me and he gives me the creeps. And it was like, if it was a cartoon, there'd have been a light bulb above my head. It's like, wait a minute, I don't even like this guy. I don't even want him to come to church. Ding, 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 ding. Wait, maybe he shouldn't. I can either have good people who want to come and serve God, they're converts, or I can have this unclean psycho. So I said, no. And I took him outside and began from that moment. It wasn't but a few days as I wound up getting rid of him because I said, hey, it's not worth it. These people don't want to come to church because this guy's disrupting the whole church. He must be dealt with. That was a very early ministry lesson. The fourth thing that happens, if you are unwilling to deal with people in confrontation is you lose the respect of others. This is the problem. What happens is in a home, on the job, in a ministry, or in a church, other people now look at you. You can have somebody who they are lying, dishonest, unreliable, violent, you know, fill in the blank of what their problem is. And so people know what they are, but the problem is they don't just look at them and say, that guy's a problem. They start looking at the leader who won't deal with them, and they start looking at you negatively. Well, there's no point in telling the boss. There's no point in telling dad. There's no point in telling the pastor because he's not going to do anything. So you lose respect. You cannot lead unless you're willing to confront. Third aspect in our story is judging disciples. So first is sensing. Second is confronting. Third issue is judgment. Very simple lesson in this story is that sometimes men with character issues need to be removed from ministry. Verse 27, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you. This had a very practical effect. You know that lepers were not allowed to be near people without leprosy. So, the very simple consequence, he lost his ministry. You can't be a disciple with leprosy anymore. So, sometimes this is necessary. You can confront things, hey, you got to work on that, that's a... But there are times when you can't continue in your ministry. Now, number one, you do that for redemptive purposes. The whole point of taking people out of ministry is to wake them up. You can't continue like this. You continue like this. You have a low-level ministry. If you continue like this, you're gonna destroy. So, in this case, it is for the ultimate good of the person. And the whole idea is that you be reinstated. It's not forever. It's a temporary measure. Put back in ministry, hopefully as a better man. And I often tell people who are out of ministry, I don't have any interest in you going back in ministry the way you were. I want you to be different. I want you to be better. So this will be a good thing. It's redemptive. The second aspect is preventative. By judging with leprosy here is there's a simple statement that's being made. You can't let men without character damage the work of God. So this is for other people's safety. So that's a safety issue. My psycho back in Launceston, Tasmania in 1986 or whatever year it was when I was dealing with him. It was simple. He was unclean. This is the kind of guy he'd be like a peeping Tom or a rapist. So it's safety. Is the women got the creeps from this guy? So it's a safety issue. I'm not going to let you do that. That sometime is in ministry. There's for people's salvation. No, I can't explain every aspect of that. Just take my word for it. Or the second issue is you do this for other people's warning. It's a good lesson. When people are judged, regardless of the position they hold, that's a warning. The Bible speaks and says, talks about that you judge people. You do this publicly, so that others may fear. And so we have debated that. Does that mean that you announce it? So we have not felt that it's necessary to put it in the bulletin or to announce it and say, hey, everybody, you know, this guy is doing this or that. But simply the removal from ministry, anybody who's got half a brain figures that there's something wrong. So that is in itself. So the whole idea, Bible says that's a good warning for other people. If you are drifting, take heed. That's a good warning for you. So, the story here is, it ends in a bummer. I'd love to say that he had leprosy for 90 days and then it was taken away. But that's not what happened. So, usually the issue is, what happens after judgment is usually up to the disciple or up to the one who is judged. So, very simple is if people want to change, our default is to let them. And we've done this. We've had people who have done very very serious violations in life, but ultimately we allow them to change because our default, if possible, there's a few, you know, rare exceptions to that, but usually what you want is if people want to change, it is a healthy message that you can be healed, you can be restored. It's not a matter of, we don't discipline people because they personally offended us and you made me look bad, so I'm cutting you off and never letting you breathe again. Is if people want to change, you let them. But on the other hand, Gehazi goes away and that's the last of him. He dies with leprosy. So if people won't deal with issues, you can't make them. That's the balance. Try to redeem, but if people don't deal with the factors that, with the leprosy that was inside, you can't make them be healed. So that's the balance of life, and the great tragedy that I have known over the years is there are people that are not with us today in our church, or people that I've pastored, is they have made choices and they will not heal them, and that breaks my heart. I wish that wasn't true because my heart goes with them, like Elijah. But they have to be wanting to fix that. So here's the lesson that has to do with dealing with disciples. Isaac.
So in any kind of church, if there's something, like you said, the women came to you. You had felt something about them, but can you, I mean, my wife comes up and tells me, oh, that guy's creepy, and I'm like, I didn't even notice. Is that something... So
yeah,
women are more sensitive.
Yeah, generally on moral issues, women are more sensitive than men, yes.
Can I pray for that kind of sensitivity?
Female sensitivity.
Stretch that from the room.
Yeah.
You get in touch
no, just to be more aware, because I feel stupid sometimes, like, why didn't I see that?
Yeah. So, it's of course, you have to use this as a balance. There are women that are
right
imbalanced. But... very good lesson. I was very inexperienced, and I had to learn over time to listen to my wife's warnings. So sometimes that was undeveloped. Like you say, that gives me the creeps. In this case, yeah, I felt it was, but one of the things in pioneering is you want any living human being. You have a heartbeat. You qualify. Come to church. And so I'm wanting people in. So obviously I wasn't excited about the idea of we need somebody to not be in. So it took me time to listen to that and pay attention. So, but a balanced, if your wife is a balanced woman, Lisa's a balanced woman. So I learned that over time to listen to what she said.
And then,
pay attention to that.
So that's with moral issues. With the other issues, you can pray for sensitivity for that, and then you said praying for that person will open up your eyes. That's what Elisha did. That's why he knew.
Yeah. So again, my number one prayer overall is wisdom. I need wisdom in every area. I need wisdom in all kinds of things. So, yeah. So the balance of that, let's go back to the wife thing, is that on the other hand, women don't run the church.
Right.
So I don't act on every female intuition. You don't like this, you don't like that. So, I don't pastor by women's vetch either. You know, that bugs me. We're going to talk about it for an hour and a half of somebody who ticks them off in church. No, we don't have that kind of, that's not how my wife and I operate. Or there may be things that are in the file away category, right? So there are things that you just file away. In this case, yeah, that was easy. I just was inexperienced, but I felt that the guy was creepy too. But there have been other things where it's been something you totally wouldn't pick. And so you just file that away.
So, okay, so my wife, so new converts have come in and she's like, I get the creeps from that guy. And then I said, okay, well, he's a new convert. She just didn't know.
Yeah, sure.
And I said, he's a new convert. And then later on, she's like, wow, I don't get the creeps from him anymore.
Yeah.
So that was one of those things that I just put away. And we're not going to be like, I can't.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then I have another question.
And so let's differentiate. So number one, the most serious, the technical term is the creeps, right? So the most serious form is anybody who is that way towards children.
Okay.
Right? I don't mess with kids. If people, that guy gives me the creeps towards children, or he's acting in any way inappropriate toward, I don't mess with that. I can't.
Right.
That is so dangerous. Let's get practical. Did you see the Courier yesterday?
I did.
Headline, pastor arrested. That was the headline. Child molestation.
Mm.
So this would be very, very damaging to a church. So you imagine that kind of headline. You imagine the Potter's House. Yeah, there was somebody being molested in the church, or somebody at church. So I can't mess with that. Absolutely not. I think it was Dwayne when he was in Las Vegas. Wasn't there a mega church that there was a child molestation? Was that you or yeah? And so a mega church went from thousands to a few hundred in weeks. Gone. So number one with children is the highest level of caution. Okay. Then the second most important is guys that are creepy, and you know something that has to do with sexual violence or sexual aggression. A rapist. We have a guy who wants to come to our church this day. He's a rapist. And one time when he had come back to church, he started stalking a woman. He's out forever and ever. I don't care. Doesn't matter. He sends in money to the church. I don't care. He is never coming back, period. Because I can't. That's not fair to put people at risk. Now, then you have people, they're just unclean because they've given themselves to pornography or other things. Is you just get a slimy feel from them because they're unclean. As you say, with salvation, that will change. They can be healed. So you learn to, fortunately, child molestation, a rarity. I've only personally ever dealt with one rapist in 30 years of ministry. So fortunately, those are rare issues. The standard garden variety pervert is that can be healed, that can be fixed. And then there's something in time, they're not changing or they're not getting it, you know, then there are things that they're saved now for a while, and they're being, hey, don't talk to the women,
yeah.
Stay away. You know, you can balance that.
Okay. And then,
so,
my other question is, if you know, depending on what the issue is, if someone has to be sat down, or, well, I guess if they're put out, I mean, we want to pray for everybody, but is that something we need to be like praying and praying and praying and praying for them while they're out? I mean. I want people to be saved, but if they don't want to come,
well, obviously, is you have different levels. Is God puts people in circles of relationship, right? So number one, if they're from your family, you're more likely to pray for them than if they're not in your family, right? If they're your friend, you'd be more likely to pray for them. You know, there are people I may pray for occasionally. As I think about them, but you know, I got a lot of people on my mind, so I can't say that I'm daily calling out to the Lord for people that I put out 5 years ago. That would be dishonest if I said that.
Okay.
That's just not practical. Okay. I have a finite brain. But I believe that there are people closer to them that would be calling on God for them.
Okay.
So as I say, and again, even if we make a decision, I put people out for child molesting issues, I put people out, you know, the rapist, that doesn't mean they can't be saved.
Right.
So I'm not saying they can't be saved, it's just not workable. Right? It's not workable. That. So what do I got to do? I got to have armed guards sitting next to them during service. That's just not workable. So I can't. But in no way am I, I'm not the judge of someone's salvation ultimately. That's between them and God. You can be healed, you can find a different environment that may work better for you, etc., etc. Oh, you raised it? Yes?
I was wondering, are there examples of how this story would have gone differently if he had, instead of lying to Naaman, he went and said, you know, Elisha doesn't want it, but I do, kind of a thing, instead of making the lie. And then when he came back, he'd say, yeah, I did go and take the stuff.
I don't know. All we see is that he was dishonest in getting it, and then he was dishonest about owning up to it.
I'm wondering how it would be.
Yeah. So, but there are guys that, you know, you don't want to you don't want to desensitize or deaden your conscience. So there are guys that they do things wrong and they feel bad about it. They, hey, you know what? I did something that wasn't good. That's a healthy thing. There's hope for that. Again, the fact I'm not, I am, you know, you hear my my joke that I joke with the pastors is, how is that possible that someone under our superior ministry could do anything wrong? So we're under no delusions as to the fact of human nature. People can do wrong even in our ministry. And so doing wrong doesn't disqualify you for life. That's the whole point. You deal with it. This is the whole point, is learning to develop people for their best interests. So, in general. So I think the lesson is don't deaden your conscience. That's the problem. And I've preached on, from the standpoint of Gehazi, I think the lesson of Gehazi is the leprosy was in there for a long time, but it was inside. All God did, Elisha allowed it to be seen outside. Andy?
How do you, Pastor, keep the right attitude with seeing some people go sour, but always believe that they can change? Personally, for me, I've dealt with you from you, and it seemed as if you just, you know, all the people that have gone sour, you could have just kind of, oh, well, he's just probably going to,
yeah.
But keep a right attitude. And
yeah, so I think number one is that we have, you know, the great example is Pastor Mitchell. I mean, he's been burned more than any human being alive. So, but he has made decisions, and it's relationship with God. When we have had splits in our fellowship, disruption, pastors who violated left, and people ask Pastor Mitchell, how do you survive? How can you go on? His answer is always, I have a relationship with God. He brings those things to God. You have to recognize that about yourself. That's part of it in ministry. There are times when I come and I am bursting with enthusiasm and love for the human race. It's like, man, I can't wait. This is fantastic. There are other times I wake up in the morning and it's like, ah, crap. You know, that's how I feel about life. And so, but I recognize on the oh crap days, it's not healthy to go on like that, right? So I am going to God and saying, God, you have to help me. This is not healthy. I'm getting cynical. You need to touch me. The pastor has to be touched first. So you got to help me. You got to recognize that about yourself, and don't cement your cynicism, because that's a dangerous thing to do.
Is the issue the only time in the Old Testament where leprosy was healed, when Naaman was healed?
In the Old Testament?
Yeah. Did Jesus heal lepers every once in a while? But in the Old Testament, that was the only thing I could think of. And
sorry?
Better.
Three lepers.
Where?
Where they were by the wall and they got up and started to walk.
No, it doesn't say they got healed. No, the four lepers.
I think they were healed, maybe.
No. Yeah, I think that's the only healing that I know. Well, that's the only actual recorded, but the Bible does, in the law, speak about the process of healing four lepers. So it must have happened. It just was a... obviously, the Bible is not a record of every human event that ever happened in the history.
I was just thinking it was cool that Jesus healed lepers, whereas in the Old Testament it's pretty rare.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would put that more as personal choice. So. Yep.
As a leader, how do you... If there's a pastor in an area and he gets a funky vibe off of like an actual leader of an area, how do you deal with that kind of a situation without actually in the middle, without actually changing? If a man comes up to you and goes, hey, this leader, man, he's just weird, I don't, you know, you get a funky vibe off of him or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of deep issues, because there's a whole lot that's kind of way beyond your... Don't worry about it. There's not even any point in me talking about that, because that's so far beyond your... experience. What you need to do is your level. Yeah. Complicated. That's the point. It is complicated. And the point is, we all have to watch our hearts at any level.
So one of the points you made was having a genuine concern for his disciples. Obviously, we're going to have people that we work with or people in our church that, you know, maybe are not getting it yet or they're frustrating. Is that kind of like praying for God to give us a heart for people that it's like this person is really, really annoying or frustrating or something like that, that I could pray and God would give me genuine concern?
Well, yeah, that's where it begins. If you don't have a genuine love for people, you better pray for that. That's what Pastor Mitchell has taught us over the years, is pray that God would give you compassion for people and burden for souls. Because you can't function in ministry by a program. It may be cool, the thought of rising in ministry and being sent out may be cool, but it won't sustain you. You have to genuinely love people, because at some point you will become embittered at people if you don't genuinely love them. And then again, that's seasonal as well. So as I very distinctly, there was a time where I recognized I did not have compassion for people and was concerned. I knew that wasn't good and went and asked Pastor to pray for it. So, and I can tell you that God did that. He did a miracle in me. But then that something has to be renewed from on a regular basis, you know, in the seasonal issues.
You talked about inquiring. Now, I've also heard you speak about praying for the truth to be revealed. So, you know, obviously, the basis would be a relationship with God. But what is there a balance between inquiring and praying that the truth would come to light?
Yes, I think the issue is, number one, not everything I feel do I act on. I mean, I may have a feeling about somebody that may be just temporary. Right, I may have that guy. There's something funky about him, and he may be going through something. He may, you know, go to the altar, get it right, and I don't feel that about him anymore. And I never needed to do a thing about it. There are things that I feel about people, and there may be something genuinely wrong, but they don't have any disruptive factor. They have no credibility. They have no relationship there. So there's no point in me. Hey, how come you feel like a slime ball? Come on, what flavor slime ball are you? You know, I don't need to do that because they're not hurting anybody. Now, I'm getting people come and complain, hey, this guy, he's always hanging around my wife. That's a different issue. So it's the disruptive factor. And then, of course, it may be, a lot of times there may be things that I feel, and I simply pray, as Pastor Richard taught me, is I pray, God, you know, yes, bring truth to life, but bring them to me. So it may be that God may move on them. Hey, Pastor, I need to talk to you about something, about that issue. Pastor, I'm struggling in things aren't working. Well, let me ask you something, right? So now it's an open door, and then of course relationship. The more interaction you have with people, right? There are people that show up here every few weeks. Right, they come every 3 weeks, and they're a part of our church. So I don't simply, hey, haven't seen you in a week. What's wrong with you? You know, that's not you know, do the math. You can't be simply confronting every funky feeling that you get. Discipleship is a different level. There are people that are funky in our church, but they have no involvement in ministry. They don't. So I'm not going after them. Right. They may be doing all kinds of things that are not right. Now, you're in ministry, and you're doing. I hear that someone's doing something wrong. I got an odd feel about them. That's a different issue. I want to be a disciple. I want to be a man of God. So there's different levels. So back to your question: when I feel something, is I simply, what level are they at? Are they causing disruption? I file that away and pray. Right. And that may be true on lots of different levels.
Okay, so we're talking about a lot of moral stuff, like he lied and stole. This would be for anything. If someone's just fighting all the time with people in ministries,
sure,
it would be the same thing.
Sure.
The same process, asking, you know, praying for them, getting the mind of God, and then dealing with it.
Yeah.
If it doesn't change.
and you have, yeah, so we're talking about literal things that are going wrong, but sometimes there are guys that they are simply battling in themselves. They're battling with the will of God, right? And so when they're battling with the will of God, they exhibit a funky attitude, a sour disposition. There are some guys that are transparent. I can tell by how they dress, how they're doing, and how you dress is not an we're not a you're saved because you look saved, dress saved. But there are people, they are so transparent. When they're doing well, they dress well. When they're not doing well, they dress. It's like, whoa. And that's not true in every case. But they're, you know what I mean? But sometimes they're just battling in themselves. That doesn't mean that they're serial killers. It just means that they may be wrestling with their own frustrations. Maybe they're upset about their marriage, their finances, their the call of God, you know. So, if I leave them, lo and behold, then they resolve it. God gets a hold of them. So it doesn't have to be that they are lying, thieving, serial killer, rapist, pervert, child molester. It doesn't have to be. So, that's why you just file things away.
I mean, everyone can say, I don't have kids yet, I can say, I'm going to be a father that corrects my kids. But I've seen pastors that they don't have kids till they're out on the field. And then they, as they're growing up, I knew one pastor, they got to be, my age, and they're openly fornicating in the church. Everyone knows about it, and they don't correct them, and they're, obviously in turn their church isn't being fruitful. But how do you recognize that in yourself? Because anyone can say, I won't be like that. But how do you recognize that and deal with that early on so you're not having to reap the consequences later?
That was a convoluted question. I assume that how do you know that in yourself is you're not referring to fornication yourself. You're referring to childbirth, right?
Correct.
I am unaware that I'm fornicating. Yeah, that's an unanswerable question. You have to be in it to know it. That's the key. So a lot of people are experts till they have kids. Then you deal with real life situations. So that's an unanswerable question. Dwayne?
He's such a study, the regression of this man, he almost starts out like a hireling, would that be accurate? Praying for the child, not really. So, is there a lesson here about you've actually had disciples who are actually policing the flock? I mean, taking advantage of their position? I need some money? They violate the position. Does that usually begin with a hireling spirit?
I think so. Yeah, I would say that Gehazi, yes, I think the lesson of the fact that the woman didn't, we said in a previous lesson, she didn't come to him because she knew he didn't care. And then secondly, the fact that he laid the staff and nothing happened, and he never asked a question. So clearly he was a man of image. He was cared about what he looked like rather than being right. So, but to your question, yeah, in obviously as a, if a person is not a pastor, they have limited opportunity to fleece people. Generally, the only, we would have people who have businesses and they're burning people, right? Years ago, we had a guy that was a mechanic and had people that wanted to kill him because he ripped off he'd take money and never fix the car, or he would do a bad job and the motor would blow up, and he'd do this repeatedly. So that's a business violation. Or you have the mooch spirit of someone who they're always borrowing money. Yeah, then that's a different level. But usually they don't have any power to do that. What becomes dangerous is, and again, it's rare, but when you have pastors that do that, now you have people, it's different. People will loan, in rare cases, they would loan a pastor money because of his position. And so, there's never going to be a time I would ever borrow money from a person in the church. Or expect, I am very cautious even about gifts. That's, Pastor Mitchell has raised us. We are not... I don't view, you all here are to give me stuff. I'm very cautious about that. So, but we do have, and it's cultural. right? As you know, in Africa, we had to deal with people who they become pastors, and so that's how that, you know, what was it? One of our pastors in Soweto, a sinner lady said, "Oh, you're a pastor. Oh, that's a good business." Because that's what they're used to. Because of your position, now you start, hey, give me this, I want to borrow that, give me, you know, you got to help the man of God. So we don't, when we hear of pastors who are using their position to get stuff from people, we're on it, because that's, we view that as a violation. We're very cautious about that. Any other questions? And I realize that dealing with these things from a leadership perspective, obviously these are things that you may not deal with for many years to come. So this is in the file it away category. Stuff you think about later on. Okay. Thanks, guys.